am honored to be following in the footsteps of all the other great ESPY hosts, timeless icons like Jimmy Smits, Jeff Foxworthy, and of course, who's the boss is Tony Danza. The only difference between me and those other guys, I knew when to retire. John Cena is an athlete the same way that Ryan Lochte is a reliable witness. Last year's LA Rams are the subject of the critically acclaimed docuseries All or Nothing. Spoiler, it's nothing. This year, Aaron Rodgers delivered on his promise to the fans of Green Bay that the Packers would run the table. Also this year, Terrell Owens delivered on his promise to his bosses at Golden Corral that he would mop the floor. These are all New York Knicks jokes. And these ESPY folks, they begged me to do these. And I gotta tell you, they absolutely make me sick. Kristaps Porzingis couldn't believe how dysfunctional it is at Madison Square Garden. And that dude grew up in Latvia. They had to escort a former legend out of the building for acting like a crazy person. Then there was that whole thing with Charles Oakley. And I love that Serena Williams won the Australian Open while carrying a child. I mean, that's even more impressive than 2 years ago when the Denver Broncos defense won the Super Bowl while carrying me.
Yeah, the first time I seen him was at halftime. I saw him running in the basket. You know, that's a big dude. And that's pretty cool, you know, seeing him there. Hopefully he saw a good game.
So you didn't see him in the first half?
I didn't see him until halftime, but when I saw him, it was pretty cool.
Why were you wearing purple Nikes tonight?
Just, you know, that Triple B, you can wear whatever you want. So I already played in both my shoes. You know, might as well just get the Mamba mentality going and put them on, and it worked out tonight.
I love the idea of using technology with our game. I think replays made the game better. I think the issue with respect to the strike zone is that the technology just is not there yet. It's adequate to put a box up in a broadcast and, you know, give fans an idea about where a pitch was, but the margin of error in it is really not up to the task of calling balls and strikes. Once you go to automation, there's no human discourse to express frustration to or to talk about in terms of what happened. And, you know, the umpires are part of the game, and I think we need to, you know, really think through that question as to whether we want to take them out. You know, I don't think we've made any progress on the pace issues. My goal would be to get an agreement with players, maybe an agreement that involved more than 1 year in terms of exactly what was going to happen, that we all feel will deal with some of the issues related to the game in terms of pace.
Welcome to the Bob France Afternoon Extravaganza on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
Indeed. Welcome to the extravaganza right here on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket. We are Toledo's sports leader, 11 minutes after 3. Hope you're having an outstanding Thursday afternoon. We had a little bit of a struggle earlier on ourselves, a little bit of a power outage situation. Hopefully it didn't cause too much trouble for you. But what did you think about the ESPYs? We just opened up the entire show with a big montage of Peyton Manning jokes, minus the funniest joke of the night, the one that everybody is reacting to, and that is, well,
our gymnastics team was so dominant that Kevin Durant told me he wants to play for them next year.
The look.
And I got to tell you, I don't think you'd start for that team, Kevin. Yeah. Russell Westbrook, what do you think?
That's the story of the night from the ESPYs last night. The only, I mean, first of all, Peyton Manning did an outstanding job. And it's easy for me to say that. You want to know why? Because I didn't watch. I don't watch award shows. I don't watch Grammys. I don't watch Emmys. I don't watch Oscars, and I don't watch ESPYs. I don't like award shows. Self-glorification of, just that. Glorification. Here's how awesome we are. Let's tell each other how great we are. We are the best people in the planet at what we do. Let's tell everybody about it. I don't like award shows. Never have. Never will. But I do follow the news. And so I paid attention today, and I listened to that little montage. Peyton Manning had some very good material there. Not that I think he wrote it. He didn't, any more than, you know, Letterman wrote his material, or Johnny Carson wrote his material, or people like Jimmy Fallon and Kimmel, Jimmy Kimmel. They don't write their own either. They got professional comedians who are writers who write for them and collaborate with them. So I know Peyton Manning isn't that funny. But you know what he did? he executed last night. He did. From what I watched, he did, and what I listened to, he did an outstanding job of hitting the jokes with the right tone. I love the self-deprecation where he can poke the fun at himself and point the finger at himself. That Broncos defense carrying him joke was really, really classic. And I thought the entire thing from Peyton Manning was what Peyton Manning is always, classy, in addition to classic. So having said all of that, the story of the day, was Kevin Durant really ticked? Was he really furious as he sat there with that cold, icy glare, even though his mother was laughing? Was he seriously mad that Peyton Manning at the ESPYs was going to tell a joke about him? Did he really think that he could go to the ESPYs and not be made fun of? It's kind of like going to, if you're Kevin Durant, you just won your first title. You're coming off of one of the most controversial seasons ever because of one of the most controversial decisions ever, leaving Oklahoma City to go take a job with the team that beat you. You were the MVP, clearly the best player on the floor of the finals. But still, that story is out there. Did you think you could go to the ESPYs and not be made fun of? It's like going to the front row at a comedy club and not expect to be engaged by the comedian. He's going to look at you. He's going to look at the girl you're with. He's going to make fun of you in her presence, or he's going to make fun of her in your presence to see what you do. You can't sit there and go, hey, 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 who are you talking about here, huh? Who are you to be talking about me like that? You don't know me. No, no, you don't get to do that. You're at a comedy club. His job is to make fun of the people in the front row. It's one of the reasons why when people buy tickets to a comedy club or to a comedy show at a theater, they ask for the front row. I want a table right by the stage. I want to be made fun of. Did Kevin Durant really think he wasn't at a comedy show last night and that he wouldn't be providing some of the laughter by being the butt of some of the jokes? Come on now. If you listen to Mike and Mike in the morning this morning, it was not Mike and Mike. It was Buster and Fitz. Ian Fitzsimmons and Buster Olney in for Mike and Mike because, well, Mike and Mike is very rarely Mike and Mike. It's always somebody and Mike or Mike and somebody. In this case, neither one of them were there. Anyway, Ian was really – they had a legitimate disagreement. Buster Olney said, come on, what do you think? You think Kevin Durant wasn't in on the joke? You think Kevin Durant wasn't told in advance, hey, we're going to bust your chops a little bit here, you know, look mad or whatever you want to do? Come on. And Buster, that's Buster Olney said, and Ian said, no, no, I think he was really mad. He didn't know that was coming, and he doesn't like being made fun of, and I don't think Russell Westbrook was having much fun with that either. Are you kidding me? Listen. If you did not see what I played for you, you know, with the audio cut a moment ago, if you did not see, well, you're probably living in a cave. Like I said, I didn't even watch the ESPYs because that's not my thing, but I saw it. So if I didn't even watch it and saw it, then come on. You had to see it, right? But if you did not see it, it's tweeted out on our Twitter feed right now, which is Sports Radio 106.5. Take a look at it for yourself and see the faces of Kevin Durant and Russell Westbrook when Peyton Manning dropped those one-liners with perfect comedic timing at both of them. And tell me if you think Kevin Durant's icy glare, without even a smirk, without even a nod, without even a shrugging of the shoulders, there's so many different things he would have done had he not known this was coming. For my money, Buster Olney is right on. He knew this was coming, and his planned response was hard, cold stare. Not funny. Doesn't make me uncomfortable. Not going to squirm in my chair. Not going to smile and smack my knee. Not going to point at Peyton and say, oh, you got me. Just cold, hard, you son of a... Do you really think Kevin Durant's thinking that? Give me a break. I'm going to play it again.
Our gymnastics team was so dominant that Kevin Durant told me he wants to play for them next year. And I got to to tell you, I don't think he'd start for that team, Kevin. Yeah. Russell Westbrook, what do you think?
And then the cutaway. The cutaway to Westbrook is classic, too. Now, again, if you did not see it, you got to watch it. But just to give you the imagery, the best I can describe it, Peyton is, of course, on the stage, and behind him is like a, you know, jumbotron. And so they're showing each person that he makes fun of, everybody he teases, he's showing them up close and personal. So everybody sees their reaction, which means everybody knows that everybody is watching. And Kevin Durant is sitting there, I'm going to put on a show. I'm going to put on a, that's not funny. That ain't funny, man. I'm going to put on that face in this moment and make Peyton Manning squirm. But Peyton Manning never let the smile leave his face. As that extended crowd roar went on, you know, the clapping, Peyton Manning just kept that smile and then said, I don't think you'd start for them. And then what about you, Russell? And a big smile too. Westbrook has his hand over his mouth and looking down kind of like, oh, man, don't even do this. Don't keep further in this thing between me and KD. Or he has his hand over his mouth because it's the only way he can push his smile down and keep from laughing out loud because he knew this was coming too. I have no doubt in my mind that either A, the producers or Peyton himself tipped them off about the joke to come, and so they prepared their responses on what would be funniest on national TV, and that would be to be cold silent, or they just are smart dudes, and they knew daggone well. They're both in the same building. Remember last time they were in the same building when they weren't playing against each other? It was the All-Star game. And you got an alley-oop from Durant to Russell, and oh, my God, you know, is that a sign of the, you know, was that an olive branch? Was that alley-oop an olive branch from Kevin to Russell? Are you guys on good terms now? Can you tell us a little bit more? Blah, blah, blah. And so they know when they're in the same building, everybody is going to talk about them. And Kevin's not dumb. Kevin Durant's a very cerebral guy. You can say whatever you want about his decision. And as I've said many times, I didn't support his decision to go and play for Golden State. I don't think it was good for basketball, and I don't think it was good for his career, or, well, his reputation anyway. His career is pretty doggone happy now. He just won the world championship, and he was the MVP. He did not coattail ride to a championship. He did not just go along on Steph's train and have a seat in the rear end and pull it out. Hey, me too, me too. No, he drove the thing. It was his championship. So I can't say it was bad for his career, but I think it was a little bad for the rep that he didn't do that in Oklahoma City. And he knows that there are still millions of fans divided on that issue. Millions of fans divided on whether or not what Kevin Durant did was taking the easy way out, the low road to a title, that sort of thing. He knows full well in that building he's going to get made fun of. He's going to get teased, and I promise you, he either knew the joke was coming because they told him, or he just sensed the joke was coming because he's a smart dude. And either way, I'm fine with it because his response made – it's why we're talking about it today. If he'd have just said, and thrown his head back and laughed, you know, belly laughed into the sky or slapped his knee, you son of a gun, Peyton. I don't care. But hold up his finger where the ring goes. Or, you know, they don't have the ring ceremony yet. But hold up his finger where the ring's going to be. If he'd have played to the camera, you know, it would have been okay. But the best response, we wouldn't be talking about it. If he'd have played to the camera, everybody would have just said, there was another one of Peyton Manning's jokes. There was another one. And Jim just played a bunch of them in the montage. And we didn't even wait for the crowd response because it wasn't the response. It was so funny. It was the joke. Well, in this case, it wasn't the joke that was so funny. It was the response. Why? Because of the way Kevin Durant handled it. By doing that, man, I'm going to kill you. Look. Given that look. You know, it looks like the look a father gives to his misbehaving kid. That's a little goofy sounding because Peyton Manning is older than Kevin Durant. But you know what I mean? Did your dad ever have the look? The look that said, you better stop what you're doing right now. I don't need to say a word. I don't need to raise a hand. I don't need to curse. I don't need to threaten. I don't need to walk toward you. I just give you the look. And the kid, dad's serious. Stop right now. That's the look that Kevin Durant gave Peyton Manning. The dad look that says, I'm serious. But he isn't serious. He's playing the game, and it was hilarious.
That gymnastics team was so dominant that Kevin Durant told me he wants to play for them next year.
There's the dad look right now. KD knew.
And I got to tell you, I don't think he'd start for that team, Kevin.
Yeah. KD knew.
What do you think?
Westbrook trying to stop him smiling. I'm telling you, it was fun. It was fun and it was funny, and there's absolutely nothing I think that that they should have changed about that. The whole monologue and the whole montage of jokes, by the way. We'll play that again, too, at the top of the hour, but it was really good stuff. But what do you think? Kush, what did you think? KD, legitimately mad? Are you on Fitzsimmons' side or playing along and having some fun with the reaction being funnier than the joke, Buster Olney side.
I'm leaning towards the latter at this point. Yeah. I mean, I can't imagine he wouldn't have thought no one was going to make any kind of joke about him. I can't imagine. He's a smart guy. I can't actually believe that he didn't see that coming. So I'm in the latter at this point until further evidence comes along.
Yeah, and there won't be.
There won't be,
soon.
Yeah.
There might be down the line, like maybe as we get into training camp for basketball in October, November, whatever it is.
Somebody decides to ask him that at a presser or
something.
Yeah,
and then he might kind of break into a little smile, a little smirk or a little wink or like, that was fun kind of a thing. He might, because I don't think, truthfully, Kevin Durant wants to be thought of by the basketball world. And truly, since the ESPYs are so cross sports and cross generational, young kids watch it, old guys watch it, just guys not me. I don't think he wants to be known to everybody as the sour puss who can't take a joke. He doesn't want to be known as the one guy in the room who didn't laugh when he got made fun of. You know who laughed when he got made fun of? Everybody else. Everybody. Including the guy making fun, Peyton Manning. He laughed at himself when he talked about Serena Williams won the Australian Open while carrying a baby, the greatest feat since the Denver Broncos defense won a Super Bowl carrying me. Everybody laughs at themselves except Kevin Durant. You think Kevin Durant wants to be known as that? No. He'll crack. He'll crack sooner or later, and the truth will come out because there's no way, I believe, that he was mad at that situation, looking like he can't take a joke. Come on. Hey, Jimmy's in Toledo. Jimmy, you're on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket. What's going on, brother? How are you?
Hey, Bob. Listen, man, you made a really good analogy. You said that he was driving the train. But isn't that just the point? He wasn't just driving the train. They were already a locomotive and a championship one at that with two or three, you know, two superstars. All he had to do is
Well, they were, but they weren't. They were, but they weren't, in my opinion, on that, Jimmy. And here's why. Because without him, the year before, they lost. And the year before that, they won, but only because it was LeBron and five nobodies because Kyrie and Kevin Love were both out. They hadn't won a legit championship with that loaded team that won 70 games the year before yet. So he shows up. Now they take out the defending champions, and they do it in short order in five games with him being the MVP. So that's why. He drove the train, and he was truly the reason why I think they won. I'll tell you this. Without Kevin Durant on that team this year, you tell me if you agree with this or not, Jimmy. Without Kevin Durant on that team, the Cavaliers win their second straight championship.
No, disagree. I'm going to tell you why. And I'm a, you know, I rooted for the Cavs, rooted for LeBron. I think LeBron's just, he's the best I've seen. I love Michael. Because he could just play all five positions. We can go over that some other time. Yeah. We probably already have.
But you don't think that you think the Warriors would have won without Kevin Durant? Tell me why.
No, and this is why, because that short shrift's what LeBron was able to do in that ridiculous performance that he put on for the ages last year. Between the block and the shot and what he was able to do, they weren't the better team last year. They just had LeBron do some incredible, almost physics-defying things to win those games, and they did, and all credit goes to them, but that was a once in a lifetime thing.
Let me tell you why you're wrong, and it's not because I think you're wrong.
Who is the odds on favorite to win the championship this year? Won the Cavs, was the Golden State Warriors.
Well, yeah, without, and why was that?
It would have been without Kevin Durant.
No, they wouldn't have won it without Kevin Durant. You know who agrees with me?
They would have been the favorites without Kevin Durant.
Do you know who agrees with me and not with you?
Well, I'm sure LeBron would agree with you.
No, that's not what I'm talking about. The Warriors agree with me and not with you.
No,
that's
Hold on.
Hear
me
out.
Of course they're going to say they're going to.
What they're going to say. Listen to me, Jimmy. Hold on.
Of course they're going to say they're going to. What are you going to tell me? They didn't want Durant?
Jimmy, you're not listening to me. This isn't a case of Durant called the Warriors and said, hey, you want me to come and play with you?
Well, of course they do, Bob, and they don't have to play him in the Western Conference Finals.
Jimmy, stop talking. You're not listening, bro.
I am listening.
No, you're not. You keep interrupting, and you're not hearing what I'm saying.
I'm hearing what you're saying.
I haven't even said it yet. How could you?
You just said that, of course, they want Durant to come with them as a means of
You're not listening. I'll tell you what, Jimmy, keep listening. I'll talk to you another time because this isn't going anywhere. Thanks for the call, but keep listening on the radio, okay? Let me lay out the story. Okay? And it wasn't me who laid out the story, by the way. It was Sports Illustrated shortly after the finals. When the finals ended last year, when the Cavaliers completed the 3-1 comeback over the Warriors, Draymond Green, sitting at his locker, texted Kevin Durant and said, man, we can't let this ever happen again. You got to come and play with us. You got to get this thing out here. You've got to come and be here because we can't let that happen again. That very message was the impetus that started the ball rolling. It was the Warriors recruiting Kevin Durant because they were afraid that they couldn't beat the Cavaliers the next time around either. They had just blown a 3-1 lead at home. Two of the final three games were in Oakland, and they blew game 7. And they said, we can never let that happen again. Call KD. So they didn't believe that they would have been able to beat the Cavaliers unless they changed something. And that something was Kevin Durant in place of Harrison Barnes. Pretty damn good improvement, right? So the point to that is Draymond Green agrees with me. So do the Warriors as a team. This wasn't Durant recruiting the Warriors. Hey, can I come and play with y'all? It was the Warriors saying, man, we need somebody to beat LeBron and Kyrie and Kevin Love next year because we failed and we gave it up and we need something better. Let's go get KD. So that's why when I say Kevin Durant was driving the train, he was the conductor, for crying out loud. He wasn't just a passenger on board like a lot of people thought he would be. The fact of the matter is the Warriors' wonderful 70-win team lost to the Cavaliers. And because they feared that they could lose to the Cavaliers again, they went and recruited the second-best player in the world to come and play for them. So Durant took that and said, all right, I'm coming and I'm driving. Not like I'm just coming to an already championship team that Steph drives and where, Clay is the navigator and Draymond is shoveling the coal. And I'm just giving a bunch of locomotive references here so you understand the point. And KD is, it's already on its way to a championship and KD just hopped on the caboose for a ride. No, they were not a lock to win a championship over the Cavaliers in this season. And that's why they went and got KD and said, you got to drive. And guess who got out of the way real quick? Steph Curry got out of the way real quick because he knew that he wasn't going to be able to drive that team to a win over LeBron and the Cavaliers if he was in the conductor's seat. It had to be Kevin Durant. And so he got out of the way in the regular season. Durant had an MVP first half, might have been the MVP had he not gotten injured with that hyperextended knee when Pachulia backed into him. And he missed, a month and a half, whatever it was? He might have been the MVP. So he drove the train. He was the MVP of the regular season for the Warriors, might have been for the whole league, and then certainly was in the finals. He didn't just glom onto a train that was already running to a championship, Jimmy, the way you're saying. And again, if you want to disagree with me, that's okay. I'll disagree with you. You disagree with me. That's the nature of Sports Talk Radio, and I love you, bro. Great call. But don't listen to either one of us then. Listen to Draymond. listened to the Warriors, who said we had to go and recruit somebody to make us good enough to beat Cleveland. We didn't have it yet. He put us over the top, and he actually ended up being our driving force. That's the point I was trying to make. All right, let me get a quick timeout here. Well, we still got golf tickets left, Jimmy?
Indeed we do, yes.
Cushland says we've got another four-pack of any-day ground passes to the Marathon Classic, which starts at Highland Meadows on Monday. It's all week long. And, by the way, I might as well tell you about what's going on there. We've got you covered wall-to-wall at the Marathon Classic. Mike Miller and Drive Time is going to be out there all week long from 5 until 6 at Highland Meadows. We will broadcast live with the Extravaganza Thursday and Friday, the day the start and second round of the tournament, 3 to 5. Mike Jamison and Great Lakes Golf today. Be there Saturday, 8 to noon. Cheap seats with Mick Gonzalez Sunday morning. Cushland, you're going to be out there all weekend long providing updates as well Saturday
Indeed.
And Sunday. So it is complete coverage of the Marathon Classic. And you can be there with a four-pack of any-day ground passes, whatever day you want, to the Classic at Highland Meadows. If you are caller number, pick a number, Cush.
Six.
Six at 866-240-1065. 866-240-1065. Do you think Durant was legit mad last night, or was he playing for the cameras because he knew the joke was coming and he was in on it? Was he playing the crowd, or was he legit mad? I want to hear from you at 866-240-1065 on the ticket.
Be part of the extravaganza right now by calling 866-240-1065. Now back to the Bob France extravaganza on 106.5 The Ticket.
Oh, my goodness gracious, 341. As we roll onward on this Thursday afternoon edition of the extravaganza, I love Jimmy. He's a great caller. Every time he calls, by the way, we argue. Not almost every time, but it's always good argument. You know what I mean? It's not one of those vicious things, but he's a very smart dude who's got strong opinions. He should host a show sometime. No joke, Jimmy. Good stuff. Anyway, aside from that, I just think he's wrong. Kevin Durant did drive that thing. I don't think that the Cavaliers, the way they played against the Raptors and the Celtics and, of course, the Pacers in the first round, the way they rolled and the way they shot the basketball, and they certainly should have won a second game from the Warriors. It was, what, game three? They should have won game three. That's the one where they had the big lead, and then they blew it. And Korver, of course, missed the three. That very easily could have been a 3-2 series, and then Lord knows what happens. But I don't believe, without Kevin Durant and the way he played, got big bucket after big bucket, played great D, blocked LeBron shots, all these things. I don't think I just don't think they beat the Cavaliers without Kevin Durant. That's why you can't just say he glommed on and rode to a championship that was already going to happen. He made the championship happen. I don't think it happens without him. Truly do not think that happens. So really good conversation. As to the question, I finally got Twitter to work. For whatever reason, it was kind of frozen up a little bit. Our Twitter feed, follow it and take a look at Sports Radio 106.5. And there's a video there of Peyton Manning and the joke that I've been playing for a couple of times now. I think I played it twice. I'll play it again just so you know what the hell we're talking about. If you just turned on the radio, Peyton Manning last night had a lot of great one-liners. That's what he's about as the host of a show like this. He's supposed to tell jokes and make fun of everybody, and he made fun of Kevin Durant. And I can't hear him making fun of Kevin Durant. Why can't I hear him making fun of Kevin Durant? Oh, there's a little matter of the volume. Let's try it again.
Our gymnastics team was so dominant that Kevin Durant told me he wants to play for them next year.
It should be pointed out, by the way, this, I don't know how long this is, 8, 9, 10 seconds of sustained screaming applause. Peyton Manning's mouth is hanging open the whole time, ready to hit the next part of the punchline, and he has to wait because, you know, usually a good comic, and Peyton Manning's pretty damn comfortable in front of a crowd, probably because of his time hosting Saturday Night Live and shooting so many TV commercials. He's really good. But Manning, being the good, you know, having the good comedic timing that he does, is waiting once the crowd starts to die down a little bit on that joke. That's when he hits him with the next piece. And his mouth is open. He's about to say, and he can't because the sustained applause is so long. And because the sustained applause is so long, and Manning can't get the next punchline out, the camera stays on Durant. And his frozen, staring straight ahead, I'm pissed at you look. You know? And the longer he was on screen, the more people applauded. And it just kind of built on itself for the longest time there, but it's hysterical. You can watch the video now. It's on Twitter. It's been watched on YouTube 419,000, just this particular one alone, and there's a lot more than that out there. But you can watch it on our Twitter feed at Sports Radio 106.5, and here it is again. Look good. You'll have to imagine the look until Peyton gets ready to finish the line. Wait. Wait for it. Wait for it. Wait for it.
And I got to tell you, I don't think he'd start for that team, Kevin. Yeah. Russell Westbrook, what do you think?
And then, of course, the crowd continues just as long as Westbrook sits there looking with, he's got his round dark sunglasses on, and he's looking down. He's got his hand over his mouth, and I swear to you, it's to hide the smile because he doesn't want any, let anybody in. He wants everybody to think, I'm pissed too. KD's mad. I'm mad. What you talking about us for? You don't get to do that. That's what they wanted everybody to think. So watch the video, and the poll is up. The poll question is up now on our Twitter feed at Sports Radio 106.5. And that poll question is very simple. Do you think at KD Trey 5 was legit PO'd, or was he in on the joke and playing for the camera? And right now the post, two people just voted within the last 10 seconds, and it's one each. So keep those votes coming in, and we'll update you on the tally as the program goes on this afternoon. Now, a couple of other NBA notes to talk about here. I don't need to hear from you. A couple of other NBA notes to talk about. How about your boy, Kushlin Lonzo Ball? How about your boy becoming the first player in NBA Summer League history? I did not know this. I do now. In NBA Summer League history to go for 30 and 10, 30 points and 10 assists. But just to, I don't know, for good measure, he also threw in 8 rebounds in his game last night. Lonzo Ball living up to the hype, maybe even exceeding the hype in summer league play. What do you take away from 36 points, 11 assists, 8 rebounds, 5 steals, and 2 blocks in a 1-point win over the Philadelphia 76ers in summer league? Real deal?
It tells us that he does have the talent and he does have the abilities to be able to pull this off. You know, call me back at the end of October, early November, if he's putting up those numbers in real NBA games. And I think he is kind of capable of that. So I wouldn't say he's fully living up to the hype just yet, because summer league is summer league. You can only take but so much. I think it was Eddie Meissonette last week earlier this week.
Yeah.
And this came up, and I think his response, and I kind of agree with that, is something akin to, you know, it is summer league. The biggest thing that guys are looking for is, are you competent? And we've at least answered that question. He is.
Well, he's more than competent. He was dominant. Dominant kind of rhymes with competent. So, okay. But the way, what I pointed out, two things, there's three things actually, three elements to the Lonzo Ball story from last night that I want people to think about. Number one, as Eddie Meissonette said, this is summer league. He just hung up 36, 11, 8, 5, and 2 on a bunch of dudes who are going to be laying carpet in October. Okay? Guys.
Or they're playing in the D League or G League or whatever the heck they're calling it now.
Do they even have the D League anymore? I thought they disbanded the damn thing.
No, I think they're calling it something else.
All right, so they got rid of the D League and they're calling it something. Either way, like I said, they might as well be laying carpet because that's about how close they are to playing in the NBA. So that's number one. Opponents, competition here, kind of, you know, let's be real. Number two, I find it interesting how healthy he looked. Just, two days after, he had to sit out a game.
Yeah.
He had to sit out a game where he was going to be playing for the first time. The point guard who destroyed him and his UCLA team when the Bruins met the Kentucky Wildcats in the NCAA tournament just about 3.5 months ago, when it was a matchup against the Aaron Fox again, Lonzo Ball, we're going to hold him out for precautionary reasons. He's got a sore, I don't know, big toe. He's got a boo-boo knee. He cut himself shaving. We're going to hold him out for precautionary reasons. And as I said on Twitter this morning, wow, Lonzo seems to have recovered from his 24-hour Fox flu quite nicely. Because that's, to me, what it was. Dude got exposed by De'Aaron Fox the last time they played. And they're trying to build the Lonzo Ball brand. Not the big baller brand of his dad, which is going to be point number three in a moment, but the Lonzo Ball brand, Magic Johnson, Rob Pelinka, the Lakers are trying to build this guy into, well, what he looks like right now after last night's performance. And they didn't want him to go out there yesterday, or I guess it would have been, was it yesterday's game or was it Tuesday? I think it was Tuesday.
Yeah.
Against De'Aaron Fox, have De'Aaron Fox blow by him as many times as he did in the game with the Kentucky against UCLA and embarrass him. And make him, you know, some of the bloom come off of this rose as they're trying to expand on this guy and grow him into the face of the Lakers. So he has the 24-hour Fox flu, finally comes back, oh, I feel better now, and bang, hangs up those big numbers. So that's point number two. Number three is the Baller brand. How about your boy Lonzo Ball wearing Nike gear? He wore Kobe Bryant Mamba shoes last night rather than Big Baller Brand shoes. You remember the shoes that he and his pops want to sell, not for $195, which would be overpriced by about $150, not for $295, not for $395. Lonzo can't even wear his own L2s that he's trying to get everybody else to wear for $495. That is, if your shoe is 12 or smaller. If you're oversized 12, now we got to jack that up by another $90. It's incredible what they're trying to pull off here with this Big Baller brand shoe that even Lonzo won't freaking wear. He wears the Kobe's and puts up a night like that, leading everybody to wonder, is he, Lonzo and Pops LeVar, are they finally seeing the light of reality shining on them? That this isn't going to work, you better get with Nike, or you better get with Under Armour, or you better get with Adidas, or you better get with somebody, because Big Baller Brand isn't working. And when you are having the world watching this kid come out of the tunnel, not wearing the BBB shoes, the Big Baller Brand shoes, the L2s, the Zo2s, when you've got him wearing Kobe's, everybody is wondering, is this a Nike deal that's in the works here? And that's what they were wondering on SportsCenter, too.
Business reporter Darren Revelle joins us now. Darren, Lonzo Ball, he scores 36 points, but he wears Nike purple Kobe's instead of his own shoes. How big of a deal is this?
You know, that's what I get for going to sleep early, Linda. I had a bunch of texts in the morning. Is he signing? Is it what's going on here? You know, I think it's significant in the fact that it's only the third game that he's playing. Obviously, they're trying to promote the Big Baller brand. And yes, both LaVar and Lonzo say that there's independence here where he can wear what he wants. But it's a little bit confusing because why wouldn't you keep trying to pump up the shoes that you're selling for $495? I don't put anything past LaVar Ball. I think this was a premeditated move. This was not a last-second thing. I think that, you know, I believe that the Nike negotiations or negotiations with any other shoe company are not off the table, even though LaVar tells me there are no current negotiations.
I mean, think about this for a second. How many shoes do you think LaVar Ball has sold of his boy's Zo2s? I can tell you it's probably in the four digits, meaning just thousands. Not anywhere near five digits yet, let alone six or seven, the kind that would, that probably would happen. With a kid of his stature and, you know, his persona, talking about Lonzo, coming in, you know, a lot of people feel like he's going to be the rookie of the year, not Markelle Fultz, not Josh Jackson or anybody else, but it's all going to be about Zoe. I firmly believe that this guy's doing so poorly at selling his shoes for $495, he is starting to see the light of reality, or the cold slap of reality is hitting him in the face, and he's saying, all right, if I want to make the money that I want to make for my son and for me, I got to go talk to Phil Knight and his people. I got to go talk to the Under Armour people because he's not going to win that war. You don't break into the sneaker market based on one kid. Overcharge everybody else by $250. With your unproven kid's shoe. Nobody has any idea what kind of quality that shoe is going to be. If the sides are going to blow out, if the heel is going to be uncomfortable, what kind of padding and cushioning it's going to have. Whereas Nike, of course, has tried so many different combinations through the last 30, 35 years of shoe marketing. And, of course, Under Armour much more recently, but, of course, doing the same things. You don't break into the sneaker market at the top and say, ours are better than those here, and they're 250 better. You can go ahead and pay $250 for a Kobe if you want, but you got to pay $495 for a Zoe 2. You don't do that and be successful. It just doesn't work. And now here you are, Zoe 2s have been replaced by Kobe's, Nike Kobe's, on the feet of Zoe 1, the actual kid. That, to me, is a hysterical story, and I wonder if LeVar is starting to get his first little taste of comeuppance here since he burst onto the scene and took reality TV and Sports Center and talk radio and talk television by storm, trying to pump up all three of his boys, Kush.
Yeah, it might be the hint of reality for LeVar. Time will tell if it actually hits him and he actually realizes it. I think Lonzo does, though. He wants to go in what's, I suppose, more comfortable for him.
That's what I'm wondering, too. Is Zoe essentially saying to Pops, you know, Dad, it's summer league. I ain't wearing those uncomfortable damn things until they get them fixed, until they get them softer, until they get them more comfortable. These Kobe's feel good. I'm wearing the Kobe's. I wonder if it is Alonzo saying, you know I'm supposed to help sell these things, but they suck. Dad, I'm wearing something that I like better. And this is a direct smack at Pops saying, you know what, man, you know, let me be me.
And remember, he's now playing. He's now got, you know, getting his contract worked out. And what did LeVar say? As soon as he's out, he could do whatever he wants. So here
That's
we are.
Right. And there he is. But Dad is on WWE Monday Night Raw or pay-per-view or something like that wearing BBB. Big Baller Brand t-shirt. Big Baller Brand hat. Of course, until he rips the t-shirt off and flexes the WWE ring, which is pretty funny. But he's still trying to push the Big Baller Brand. And here comes Zoe saying, yeah, I'm not pushing with you, man. I'm pushing back against you. Here's what I want. I want to do the Kobe. So I just kind of
I can see that as a possibility, sure.
Yeah. And you know what? I got to tell you, I'm in a really, really bad place. Really bad place when it comes to Lonzo Ball. I want to be super impressed by last night, even though it was only summer league and playing against a bunch of dudes who will not be sniffing the NBA arena unless they're selling tickets in it last night. I want to be super impressed, and I want to root for the kid, but I am so turned off by Dad. I want to see Dad fail. I don't want the kid to fail, but I want Dad to fail because of all of the talking and all of the nonstop marketing and the criticism of Barkley and of Michael Jordan. Now, I'd beat both of them in one-on-one. All the crap. And my sons are both going to be worth, you want to, you know, telling the owners of Nike and Under Armour and everything else, you want a piece of Big Baller Brand, you forget about millions. We're talking billions. I want $1 billion. You don't have to pay it all up front. Remember this?
Yep, of course.
You don't
have
to pay it all up front. You can do 10 years at $100 million a year, and we'll let you have a piece of Big Baller Brand. I want that to fail because I don't like that attitude. So how do I make Dad fail? The only way Dad can fail is if son fails. And so now I can find myself having to root against LeVar or Lonzo just to shut up LeVar.
Yeah.
And that's not fair. I don't want to be that way. That's hater talk. And I admit, you know, going into the draft, I said I wouldn't want to draft Lonzo because then I'd have to deal with Dad. And I said, that makes me, you know, a hater. So be it, I'll be a hater. But I don't want to be now that I'm watching the kid play because I think it's not his fault.
Yeah.
And if this is the first step of him divorcing himself from Dad, not literally, of course, not like I'm not going to have anything to do with my pops anymore, but saying, Dad, you know what, chillax, let me control some of what I want to do here, and I don't want to be wearing those BBBs, I like these other ones, let me be. If that's what he's doing, then that's going to make it a lot easier.
Yeah.
Because then it won't be rooting for Lonzo helps LeVar, it'll be just helping Lonzo.
Yeah.
And I think it could be an awful lot of fun to watch Lonzo play.
Sure.
This coming season and beyond.
Yeah,
you know who else thinks it's fun to watch Lonzo play? Jim Cushlin?
I was waiting for you to get to this part from our point of view, the third rail about this one last night.
Yeah. Sitting courtside at a summer league game. What? LeBron James, the four-time MVP, was sitting courtside at a summer league game watching Lonzo ball. And you already know that there have been rumors that, you know, the Lakers have left a bunch of money available. Next year, they might be able to go after both Paul George, who said he wants to be a Laker, And unless they somehow in Oklahoma City find a way to beat the Warriors, he will not, you know, be compelled to stay in Oklahoma City to defend a championship. He will be a free agent again and may very well pursue that trip back home to L.A., which is where he's from. They may have enough money to get Paul George and LeBron James on max deals, giving you a core of could-be rookie of the year point guard, Lonzo Ball, two guard, Paul George, small forward LeBron James, center Brook Lopez, and oh, by the way, some pieces off the bench that aren't too shabby either, like the name of Brandon Ingram, Julius Randle, and some other pieces around them as well. It might just be something fun to think about. We talked about that before, but now it's just not talk, and now it's not just thinking because LeBron was sitting there all watching.
Yep.
And
leading to the inevitable, is he scouting Lonzo Ball?
Yeah.
That's the gist of the headline I've been thinking all day, and I kind of have to think he was.
Well,
I do at this point.
You know what he said, Jim? The one line when LeBron was asked about what he thought of him after the game, he said he passes the ball nice. Now, that might just sound like a compliment and a statement of the obvious. Well, yeah, he does. He's a great passer. But he didn't say that he scored 36. He didn't say that he rebounded 8 times.
Mm-hmm.
He said he passes the ball nice. What would a guy like LeBron James want most in a teammate? Somebody who passes the ball a lot to him. Not that that's a slap at Kyrie Irving at all, because Kyrie Irving is a shoot-first point guard, like so many other star point guards are. But it was the first thing that came out of LeBron's mouth was he passes the ball nice.
And actually,
which
Bob,
might be the kind of thing that I like to be around.
And that kind of makes sense. You were reading off some of the names that could possibly, some are, some maybe, on that Laker team. And if you have LeBron, Paul George, and Brook Lopez, well, with all due respect, Lonzo Ball, there's that team's three main scoring options. Your job is then, Lonzo, to be a competent point guard and be able to pass the ball well.
Right, which he is, you know, that's easily his strongest asset.
Right.
Not just competent, but excellent at.
Yeah.
Jason Kidd-like. Maybe, because he's a Laker, and because Magic has chosen him, maybe he'll become Magic Johnson-like in that regard. And that's exactly, you know, the kind of thing that one could see LeBron being attracted to. All that's speculative, but it is very, very interesting. Okay, first of all, congratulations to Adam Conley of Oregon. He won the marathon tickets for next week, starting out on Monday at Highland Meadows. And I've got another four-pack. No, I take that back. We've got one more. We'll give them away tomorrow. We'll give one more four-pack away tomorrow. So we're going to get a timeout here, top of the hour Sports Center. We'll come back and talk a little baseball as we get ready for the second half to start tomorrow. What will it look like for the Detroit Tigers? There are going to be some new faces almost assuredly by the end of the month because there's going to be some current familiar faces. They're going to be gone. Chris Cotilla of SB Nation joins us to talk baseball coming up next right here on The Ticket.
I am honored to be following in the footsteps of all the other great SB hosts, timeless icons like Jimmy Smits, Jeff Foxworthy, and of course, who's the boss's Tony Danza. The only difference between me and those other guys, I knew when to retire. John Cena is an athlete the same way that Ryan Lochte is a reliable witness. Last year's LA Rams are the subject of the critically acclaimed docuseries All or Nothing. Spoiler, it's nothing. This year, Aaron Rodgers delivered on his promise to the fans of Green Bay that the Packers would run the table. Also this year, Terrell Owens delivered on his promise to his bosses at Golden Corral that he would mop the floor. These are all New York Knicks jokes. And these ESPY folks, they begged me to do these. And I gotta tell you, they absolutely make me sick. Kristaps Porzingis couldn't believe how dysfunctional it is at Madison Square Garden. And that dude grew up in Latvia. They had to escort a former legend out of the building for acting like a crazy person. Then there was that whole thing with Charles Oakley. And I love that Serena Williams won the Australian Open while carrying a child. I mean, that's even more impressive than 2 years ago when the Denver Broncos defense won the Super Bowl while carrying me. And our gymnastics team was so dominant that Kevin Durant told me he wants to play for them next year. And I got to tell you, I don't think he'd start for that team, Kevin. Yeah. Russell Westbrook, what do you think?
The first time I seen him was at halftime. I saw him right under the basket. It's a big dude, and that's pretty cool, you know, seeing him there. Hopefully, he saw a good game.
So you didn't see him in the first half?
I didn't see him until halftime, but when I saw him, it was pretty cool.
Why were you wearing purple Nikes tonight?
Just, you know, that Triple B, you can wear whatever you want. So I already played in both my shoes, you know, mm-hmm. Might as well just get the Mamba mentality going and put them on, and it worked out tonight.
I love the idea of using technology with our game. I think replays made the game better. I think the issue with respect to the strike zone is that the technology just is not there yet. It's adequate to put a box up in a broadcast and, you know, give fans an idea about where a pitch was, but the margin of error in it is really not up to the task of calling balls and strikes. Once you go to automation, there's no human discourse to express frustration to or to talk about in terms of what happened. And, you know, the umpires are part of the game, and I think we need to, you know, really think through that question as to whether we want to take them out. You know, I don't think we've made any progress on the pace issues. My goal would be to get an agreement with players, maybe an agreement that involved more than 1 year in terms of exactly what was going to happen, that we all feel will deal with some of the issues related to the game in terms of pace.
This is the Bob France Afternoon Extravaganza on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
Yeah, how about that? Good stuff from Peyton Manning. Obviously hosted the ESPYs last night. Really entertaining. Love the I still say the planned little bit with Kevin Durant and Russell Westbrook there, because ain't no way anybody's going to convince me that Kevin Durant wants to be thought of as the only guy in the ESPYs last night. The only guy in the sports world that can't laugh at himself. Everybody else laughed at themselves. Peyton Manning made fun of himself. Anybody who thinks Kevin Durant's going to sit there and legitimately be ticked and be the only one who thinks that he's mad about this, come on now. Great stuff there. And then a lot from the commissioner of Major League Baseball, Rob Manfred, too, as we talk more about baseball going into the second half. And a lot of really interesting conversations going forward, including possible expansion to three cities or potentially to three cities, looking north of the border and south of the border, as well as one within the mainland of the United States. And pace of play is always an issue when you're talking about the current Major League Baseball. So joining us now to talk baseball is SB Nation baseball contributor and the site manager for MLBDailyDish.com, Chris Cotilla, right here on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket. Hey, Chris, how are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Outstanding. Thanks for the time. Hey, let's start with the obvious of what we saw over the All-Star weekend. The biggest name, you know, I mean, nice win. Great job, Robinson Cano. Wasn't won the MVP. Andrew Miller got the save. Super. But the entire All-Star weekend, and I know it's over the course of a work week, not a weekend, but let's just call it that. It was the Derby, and it was Aaron Judge. Is that the new face of baseball based on one half of one rookie year? Is this now the face of baseball, Chris?
I don't know if there's one face of baseball right now. I think, you know, talking to people in Miami, a lot of people still say Mike Trout. A lot of people still say Bryce Harper. You know, I think to be the face of baseball, you really have to win something, and none of the guys who are in contention right now have. That's why I was always, you know, before – when I've been asked this question, I've always said Chris Bryant, obviously falling off a little bit this year, and then, you know, not making the All-Star game hurts that case a little bit, but he's a great candidate as well. I think Judge in a big market doing what he's done and then performing on a national stage with a derby like that really helps his case. But, you know, there's a lot of great young talent in this game, and there's a lot of, you know, rising stars that we're going to see really stepping into, you know, the big time roles. I think, you know, times have changed. You know, maybe in the 90s and early 2000s, the biggest superstars in the country were these baseball players, whether it be, you know, Barry Bonds or Derek Jeter, or more recently David Ortiz and Manny and those guys who I grew up with. But I think now it's a lot of these younger guys who are, you know, not going to be as outspoken, not going to be as loud and as superstar driven as NBA players. We talk more about Lonzo Ball, who hasn't played a professional minute last night, if we don't count the Summer League, because we shouldn't count the Summer League. And then you do about Cody Bellinger, who's a Rookie of the Year candidate playing in the same city, or Aaron Judge. It's just the way things go right now. You know, I think, you know, none of these guys have LeVar Ball touting them, and they don't have the outspokenness, because that's just the difference between the MLB and NBA. I think we can just appreciate that there are a ton of these young stars, appreciate that there are, you know, there's a lot of talent, a lot more talent even coming up, and a more diversified talent base. I think that's really all things to be appreciative of. And if Judge steps into that role and is, you know, the hero of New York, then he'll naturally be the face of baseball. Same with Bellinger, just because they're in such big cities. And if they win, then they'll be recognized like that. Judge is going to be a big star, and that's just part of the whole being in New York.
I know it sounds goofy when I say this, but it really is about being a big star, and that, literally physically, and that's the reason I ask, kind of because, you know, what I saw at the Home Run Derby is I saw a whole bunch of Major League Baseball stars looking at this guy in awe, looking at this guy and saying, oh, my God, he's Paul Bunyan. He's 6'7", maybe 6'8", all of 280 pounds. And he heard Alex Rodriguez on Fox, want to say the day of the All-Star game, talking about, yeah, it was, because it was after the Derby. And he said, this guy's, you know, what I just described, 6'7", 280. He's a 32-inch vertical leap. He benches 400, squats 500, and is just 9% body fat. And he is in New York, not in Cleveland, not in Detroit. He's in New York, of all places. And he said other guys were looking at him with awe. And what do we love? I don't think it's changed since the campaign that, quote-unquote, saved baseball, chicks dig the long ball. We do. We all dig the long ball. This massive presence in the biggest media market, swatting home runs at a rate like this, and having a body like that where he looks like he could be a defensive end if he wanted to, or a power forward, and instead he chose baseball just to destroy the, you know, the baseball. It almost looks like what Alex Rodriguez said, which was that this might be baseball's LeBron. This could become the very face of baseball that the sport kind of needs.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I think, you know, that huge physical component is big. He's a multi-sport, former multi-sport athlete playing basketball and football. He's a tight end and has a ton of records in a bunch of sports at his high school. I think, you know, that huge imposing force and add that to the power. I think, you know, that chicks dig the long ball thing is kind of given way to a more pitcher-friendly league maybe in the last few years. And people, you know, don't love the power pitcher, the strikeouts and stuff like that as much as they love the 513-foot home run. And that is just part of it, you know, and Judge and Stanton to a little bit of lesser extent, especially this week at the Derby. Those guys are huge and they have huge power and it's just so impressive. I think, you know, the guys who are superstars are like Odell making one-handed catches and, you know, guys dunking the ball and stuff like that and these crazy physical feats and sometimes, you know, just to the casual fan, the mind games that go on within baseball are probably a little bit less impressive, at least just on the surface. So when you see these guys just come up there and physically mash like that, then it's part of it. And I think, you know, that helps contribute to the star. I also think, you know, there are so many other things that Judge does that should be appreciated past that power, hitting for average,
yeah,
you know, some fielding capabilities. Like for a guy like that to be able to move around in the outfield, just everything about him has been great so far. And I think, you know, people will really start noticing that. It's good that he was able to deliver. You know, Jeff Passan for Yahoo Sports, who we always rib each other on Twitter for different things, so I hate to give him credit out loud, and there's no record of this. But he said the other night, it's rare for, you know, an event and the star of the event to both live up to expectations, and in this case, you know, the Derby exceeded them. So I was really impressed by that. The All-Star game, a little bit of a different story, a little bit more boring, but the Derby was great.
What do you make of not just Aaron Judge, but the whole chicks dig the long ball resurgence? 500 home runs ahead of the pace at the break of the single season Major League Baseball record for home runs hit. 500. I mean, they're flying. Everybody's talking, are the balls juiced? Is something changing? Are the players getting juiced again like they did back in that era? And I don't think any of those things are really true. But is this good for baseball? Do you like seeing the scores being the way they are and the ball flying out as often as it is? You know, and quite frankly, it makes the pitchers who are having good seasons like Clayton Kershaw and others amazing that they're a little bit resistant to this. But is this good for the game that we are on such a crazy pace ahead of where we've ever been in home runs?
Yeah, I think it's, you know, it gives way to a lot of these conspiracy theories. And you know, the players being on steroids, I think, is a tough one for me to swallow, just because if they were, then they would be caught. And that comes from just saying, you know, seeing over the last couple of years these stars that have actually gotten caught, D. Gordon, you know, Starling Marte this year. Like, if these guys, they're big enough names, big enough players, and have big enough, you know, groups of agents and advisors and stuff who can tell them how to beat the test, or who can advise them not to. I mean, it's crazy that people still think that's an issue. I think the baseballs is something to look into, because there's a lot of really smart people who cover baseball who think there is something different with the baseballs. You know, Manfred's continued to deny it. You know, I'm not sure there's a lot of conspiracy theories about that. I think in general, though, it's just it's an entertaining game. You know, these home runs and guys like that. I think what I would contribute this rise to is the pitchers are throwing harder than ever before. You know, you look at a farm system, you go to a double A game, and you have three or four guys throwing 98, 99. You know, not even prospects, really, just these big time, big arms that you don't even hear about, and they're throwing that hard, and then these guys in the majors are all throwing there, and seriously, it gets back to like Newton's law that you learn in high school. Like the faster the ball comes in, the faster it's going to go out. The exit velocities are increasing, and guys are able to hit it a mile, you know, with less contact than ever before. I think that really goes into it. And then just the whole, you know, physical presence, the conditioning, guys are going to get bigger and stronger over time, and that's going to lead to more power. So there's a lot of factors. I don't buy into all the conspiracy theories as much as others, but just kind of more the natural way things are going to progress.
We are talking with Chris Cotilla of the SB Nation baseball contributor, Major League Baseball contributor there at SB Nation, and also site manager for MLBDailyDish.com. And Chris, my producer Jim, who talked to you before I did, has got a question for you.
You know, and following up on this subject, because I'm with you guys, I'm not buying into the conspiracy theories about certainly not steroids, maybe a little some with the ball, but I don't think that's the biggest reason. I can't help but get over that. I think what's also really going on here is guys aren't hitting to all fields anymore. I mean, because we talk about the home run record, there's going to be another record probably that goes down, and that's total strikeouts in a season. Used to be once upon a time you strike out a bunch and, you know, you are going to hear about it from people. That's not really as much the case right now, and so I think it's leading to a lot of guys naturally saying, well, you know, okay, they got the shift on, I'm not really good hitting the opposite way, et cetera. You know what? I'm just going to try my best to mash this thing out of here. They're adjusting their swings for that, and if I strike out, I strike out. How much do you think that's kind of playing into all this?
Well, there's obviously boom and bust for big power guys. You know, you saw that with Judge last year. He struck out in half of his at-bats, and now he's hitting for average, and you're seeing kind of these more well-balanced guys. And you think of guys like Mark Reynolds or Chris Carter, some of those guys who would hit like 190 with 45 home runs, and that's part of it, and lead the league in strikeouts. And this year, you know, as home runs go up, I'm sure strikeouts will too. I think that's a natural part of it. And also, you know, it doesn't mean, like I said, the home runs doesn't mean the pitchers have gotten less skilled. You know, you mentioned Kershaw, but Scherzer and Sale and all these other guys, you know, what they're doing in this era of big home runs is really even more impressive, like you said. And I think it's impressive that there's just the strikeout numbers have gone up. Guys, you know, you can power if I got 99-100, like I mentioned. If, you know, if they make contact, it might go out, but you can definitely power by them and get strikeouts as well.
We're talking to Chris Cotilla about Major League Baseball. What did you make of the big trade? And we want to just kind of get into some of the trade rumors that are going on right now. Obviously, we have started out with a crosstown trade in Chicago with Quintana going from the Chi Sox to the Cubs for prospects. You know, it's funny because we literally just in the last couple of days heard Theo Epstein say, we're not doing anything. Nope, best guys I can find are in that clubhouse right now. They just have to play better. What am I going to do? Who am I going to go get to improve this team that's better than what's already in the locker room or clubhouse? Obviously, a smoke signal or smoke screen, if you will, I should say, by Epstein, because he's the first guy to pull a really big major deal here. What do you make of that, and what do you think it says toward the other contenders in the National League that the Cubs are willing to make a move like that now?
It's not just a deal for this year. I think that's the key. You know, you look at these trade deadline moves, and so often over time, you know, guys have been rentals, and you've looked at, you know, those types of things where you have a guy for 2 months, and that's, you're going to really look at, you know, them being just for those 2 months, but Quintana's under control for a few more years at a very reasonable price, and I think that really played into the Cubs calculus in making the deal. Now, the Cubs have really kind of stripped their home farm system, you know, after all these guys came up. The second tier of their farm system after Rizzo and Bryant and Schwarber, Almora, Baez, Contreras, Happ, all those guys, the next tier, it has been completely traded away, you know, and trades for Mike Montgomery last year and obviously Aroldis Chapman, which helped them win a World Series, and now for Jose Quintana. So the Cubs are looking at it with, you know, it's not a surprise at all if they're being aggressive, but they really are. They know that the window is open right now. They know that they're, you know, despite being 5.5 games back, still in the thick of this thing, they know that the Brewers, you know, probably are due for some regression just based on expectations and some injuries they've had and and the Cubs are really willing to make a run. And even if they don't, they still have a really young, controllable core. A couple of big contracts there, Lester, Hayward, whatever. But Rizzo, Bryant, some of these other guys are really under control at a very low price for a while. And Quintana is going to just add to that group. I think it's a very they obviously paid a lot. Their top two prospects, two top 100 in baseball. But I think it was worth it for them, especially if you can get a guy for that long. On the White Sox side, you know, they have now the best prospect in baseball by far. And I really, really am impressed with Rick Hahn's efforts. You know, at the winter meetings, he kind of declared we're selling by trading Chris Sale. Got Moncada and Kopech and some other guys for him. For Adam Eaton, they ended up getting Giolito and Ronaldo Lopez in a huge package. And then here, you know, there's I think we're at now 12 prospects they've acquired for three players and just very, very impressive dealings to bring them to the top farm system in all of baseball. So I think I was very surprised, obviously, by seeing a crosstown trade and seeing them make it this early and seeing it be the Cubs. But it's when you really think about it, the White Sox have the best farm system, and the Cubs are making a move not just for now but for the next few years when their window's open.
Yeah, I think that's a great analysis, particularly on the Cubs side. And that's all. And there's two teams that we cover here in Toledo, Ohio, Chris, as you can imagine. They would be the Tigers and the Indians. You've got two different types of mentalities here right now. And one would be, you know, the Tigers would be akin to the Cubs and trying to White Sox to try to pull some young talent off of some teams and rebuild their farm system, which has really been decimated in recent years, while the Indians might be looking to add something to get them over the top. Of course, they were the American League champion last year, and right now they have the third best record in the American League, but they can't seem to pull away from the Twins or the Royals. So what do you see as far as pieces and parts that might be available from the Tigers and what they might draw? And then flip over to Cleveland for us, if you would, and give us your opinion on what the Indians might want to add, if anything, in order to, you know, kind of further their chances to defending their American League flag.
I'm sure the Tigers are really, you know, jealous of the White Sox kind of rebuild, because the Tigers have just a huge lack of value, basically, you know, on that roster. I think you have, it's almost certain that J.D. Martinez is going to be traded, and that's expected for a rental guy, but you're going to get, like I said, a lot less for a guy you're going to have for a couple months versus a guy you're going to have for years. And then the value of the other guys they'd like to trade goes down just because of the way the contracts are. The Verlander rumor has been out there, and he was linked to the Cubs, but, you know, no team really wants to take on that amount of money. And then, you know, if you get that amount of money taken off, then you're not going to get the best prospects back, so that hurts them for sure. I think, like I said, Martinez goes. Avila, as interesting as that is, as his dad as the GM, probably goes. But Verlander, Miggy, Kinsler, these types of guys are less likely. I think, you know, if they really want to make a huge splash, they'd make Fulmer available, but that doesn't make a lot of sense because he's under control for so long. So they're in a really tough spot of so many big contracts, no farm system really, and then no pieces to move other than, you know, the rental types that you can in JD, and so that's really tough. I think when you look at the Indians, it's tough to really augment the roster. You know, last year they identified bullpen help is always going to help. I think they knew that going out and getting Andrew Miller, and then a smaller move there in the outfield for Brandon Guyer, but the Miller move was a great one. He's still under control for a while. And then, you know, for them, I think maybe a starter. You can never have too much starting depth, but then you look at, you know, all the guys that they've had that are hurt, and Salazar and what he's kind of brought to the table, and then, you know, a pretty good group there with, you know, how Clevinger's been able to step in a little bit. It's really tough. They're one of those teams where they're just kind of solid all the way through, and it's tough to really determine exactly what kind of moves they'll make. Outfield depth is always something that you can add at this time of year. There's always a lot of those guys available, but I don't expect a big move from the Indians. You know, last year they went out and did it, and it helped them get to the World Series, and then an aggressive winter and adding Encarnacion and making that team even better. I think at this point, you know, they're still the favorites to me. I think, you know, it kind of might depend on what the Royals and Twins do. If they make some moves, which I expect the Royals will, not so sure about the Twins. They're in very different places as organizations that the Tigers, or the Indians, excuse me, may make a move, whether to help the bullpen. You can never have too many relievers or some bench depth. But for me, there's no real glaring holes there. You know, they haven't played necessarily up to expectation for most of the season, which is tough to say about a team leading division, but that's just kind of the way it's been. I wouldn't expect huge fireworks from them.
Chris Cotilla joining us from SB Nation, Major League Baseball contributor there, and also the site manager for MLBDailyDish.com as well. Jim Cushion's got a second-half question for you, Jimmy.
Yeah, and as we look into the second half, obviously we know all these trade talks are still going to be there. I find it interesting, as we all do, with that Cubs and White Sox trade today, because there's always that one earlier in July that seems to start the process. This has all the feel of it, but trading aside, the sexy pick talk right now during the All-Star break seems to be we're headed for a Dodgers-Astros World Series, as both have the two best records in baseball. How probable do you think, Chris, that's going to be? And give me a team or two from each league that could knock either of those teams off.
Well, I think, you know, there's talent across the board. It's very polarized at the top, you know, in a lot of ways. The American League, the wild card is bunched up. But for me, I think it's, you know, the Red Sox are the other team there in the American League that can really make a run. They get all their pitchers back to pitching how they can, whether that be David Price or Rick Porcello or Eduardo Rodriguez, to add with Sale, who's been dominant, and get some of these guys healthy. I think, you know, they're a real team that can make a run at Houston. Houston is kind of benefiting from being able to play in a division with some really weak clubs. The Mariners have been decimated by injuries. The Angels have actually exceeded expectations, but still not great. The Rangers not great, and the Athletics bad. So, you know, I think the Astros are obviously great. They're the favorite in my mind, but the Red Sox are right in there. I think in the National League, you know, that mediocre Central, as we've talked about, the Cubs, in my mind, are still the favorite to win the division, especially after today. I think the Brewers are due for some regression, but they keep proving me wrong every time I say that. And then, you know, Arizona and Colorado, some unique surprise teams. But I think Washington is really a team that stands out to me. I was able to spend the last month in D.C., so it might just be some recency bias in seeing them. But that lineup makes it that rotation of Strasburg and Scherzer, especially, and some of the other guys they have, Gio Gonzalez, pitching really well. They're a team that is going to be a good threat against the Dodgers if they can add bullpen help. A huge Achilles heel, the biggest need probably in all of baseball, is for the Nationals to acquire one or two relievers, a closer and a seventh or eighth inning guy probably. If they're able to do that, and they have a good farm system where they can move some of those guys, they're able to do that. I think they're really a big contender to face off against the Dodgers, and I expect they'll be aggressive because that window is closing in D.C. with Harper scheduled to be a free agent in a year and a half.
Chris, if you were Rob Manfred, we played some of the montage there before you came in, and Rob Manfred was asked a few questions about pace of play, talking about electronic strike zones, that sort of thing. Is there anything broken about the game that you would feel compelled to make any major changes on? Because, you know, we've been hearing about pace, and they've been experimenting with some things down in the minor leagues and sometimes during the fall leagues, including using the pitch clock. You know, maybe it's already in the rule book anyway, but if you don't have a runner on base, you've got to get the next pitch off. I think the actual rule book says 12, but maybe they were using, I think they're experimenting with a 20-second pitch clock that you've got to go ahead and get your be into your motion by 20 seconds. How do you feel about the pace of play, and is there anything that you would change if you were the commissioner of a game, as Rob Manfred is at this midpoint of the season, always listening to those suggestions?
That's you know, my thing with that is to, it's just a lot of minute things. You know, it's like it's a bunch of things that, you know, you can debate that, you know, it's seconds here and there. It's not really going to take that much off, and obviously, you know, pace of play has been an issue. The games are long, and for the casual fan, that's not, you know, ideal necessarily. But I think you're looking at a bunch of minute things, whether we're talking about different replay in the last couple of years or pace of play or stuff like that. You know, it's all the kind of stuff that, you know, makes you think, well, we've basically, you know, got the template that's always been there for baseball, and now that we're talking about just these smaller things, and we're probably in good shape. You know, there's always, and I think the biggest thing for me is off the field is really fixing the international draft process. I think it's really, you know, complicated, something I fully haven't even wrapped my head around and covering it for a few years. And just getting an international draft or kind of making things uniform between American players and international players. You know, you're having these kids in Latin American countries and other places getting contracts of 14, 15, 16, and package deals and all sorts of shady stuff that goes on that's really not regulated that much. You know, there's bonuses and penalties for those bonuses and just a very complicated, convoluted system that I think a lot of people are really pushing for that international draft, and we may see it in a little bit. But that's more of a niche thing. I think in general the game's healthy. There's always the talk about who's going to be the face of baseball, who's going to be the next big star to step up. And I think marketing those players is really something Major League Baseball could do a little bit better of. You know, we saw some commercials with Bryant and Rizzo earlier this year, and I expect those types of things to continue, especially, you know, if Judge and Harper and Trout and those guys are willing. It's just finding those willing participants and really marketing the game
better. Some of them are. You know what I mean? Bryce Harper doesn't shy away from the spotlight. Mike Trout doesn't like it at all. Mike Trout just wants to play, be the best player in baseball, and go home and do his thing. He doesn't like that sort of thing. But Harper does, and I get the sense that Judge, that's the reason I asked him about him before, he could as well. My question to you is, if you know or can speculate, why did baseball get away from that? Again, going back to the Chicks Dig the Long Ball campaign, it was a baseball-wide campaign to draw new interest in fans to the sport and to try to bring back fans that were so turned off by the strike in 94. And so, you had Greg Maddux and Tom Glavine and John Smoltz doing those commercials. You know, even the pitchers are taking BP because of the long ball. They marketed the fans, or excuse me, the stars to the fans by their faces. And with their personalities, which is something the NBA does, something the NFL does, and baseball has gotten away from in a large, large sense kind of since that time. So why do you suppose it is baseball hasn't been doing this all along in order to, make the faces of baseball a little bit more fan-friendly?
I think they have. It was the same stars for so long that it gets stale. You know, Jeter was there, and Jeter was, I'm sure, a star when I was 4 or 5 years old back in like 99, and I'm sure he was being marketed like that, is the same way he was being marketed in 2009 and up till his retirement, and David Ortiz, at least around here in Boston, like he's marketed the same way because he's always been the biggest star since, 2003, 2004. These guys were such stars and so good for so long and in big markets that why move away from that? I think you look at all of a sudden they're all gone and now there's this void. That's what happened. I mean, you're looking at these young stars that came in, not necessarily in the biggest markets, and we've seen some. I mean, Mookie Betts here and now Judge in New York and Seager and some of these other guys in L.A. And then when you have had those guys, for example, Clayton Kershaw hates the marketing. Another guy, like you mentioned, and Trout hates the marketing. Like, yeah. It's just tough to really fill that void with guys who aren't as willing as Jeter and Ortiz. I think it's a mixture of that. The stars they were marketing in the last few years are just guys that really probably got stale for a national audience, not here in the Northeast because there are guys, but there's that whole idea of East Coast bias and really, everyone covers the Yankees and Red Sox. So if we see Jeter and Ortiz or A-Rod or Manny in these commercials and we're just going to not even pay attention to it, why aren't they marketing our stars? Why aren't they marketing guys like Miggy, guys like Lindor in Cleveland or Sabathia when he was there, guys like that. That's a very, very interesting, way. I don't think that, the marketing of stars, at least in commercials and stuff around here, has ever changed, but I'm sure nationally people get sick of the Northeast guys and those big market guys. And now we're seeing it start to spread out a little bit, which is the way it probably should be.
Yeah, I think that is a big, big part of it. The location of some of these stars. How much of it do you think has to do with the language barrier as well? Because you just said Miggy, and you talk about, Francisco Lindor speaks English very well, but there's a lot of the stars, because this is such a multicultural game more than ever before, more and more players coming from Spanish-speaking countries or just non-English-speaking countries, and even in post-game press conferences, they have the interpreter there, and they got to do things that way. It's kind of hard to get them on commercials. It's kind of hard getting them selling products, doing endorsements, and so on and so forth if the average American fan can't understand what they're saying.
Yeah, well, I think that integrating those guys kind of just speaks to kind of how the nation's changing as a whole. You're obviously looking at a nation that is obviously speaking more Spanish, and MLB really tried to market that all week in Miami. You saw the Latin legends honored before the game with Pedro and Alomar and all those guys, and the lineups were announced both in Spanish and English and stuff like that. And Miami is obviously has a rich Hispanic tradition that a lot of other places don't, but
it's not going to spread all over the country. I mean, you don't see any NBA stars doing commercials in Spanish, and you don't see the NFL guys doing commercials in Spanish. They want to reach all the broad section of America, and you're right. It's a multicultural country, and that's fine. But when it comes to selling and marketing and pushing your sport, you don't see any of those things happening in the other sports.
I mean, it's just because I don't think you're seeing that many stars from other countries in the NFL or in the NBA comparatively to
that. That's what I mean. Baseball's kind of behind behind the eight ball, if you will, to mix your metaphors here. It's kind of behind the eight ball because so many of their stars are indeed from other countries.
But I think these guys, they're coming to America and at a very young age, and a lot of these guys are speaking English. Talking to the All-Stars this week, there's only, you know, two or three that had interpreters during media day, and like, you can market these guys. And David Ortiz was, you know, one of the biggest stars in baseball, a guy who did not grow up speaking English, obviously, in the Dominican. It's just part of the game that these guys are now, you know, really, for the most part, speaking English, and even if not, you know, being able to you know, market these guys as much as possible with what they can is an important part. I think we'll see, you know, as these guys mature and as guys have more time in the league, you know, we'll see more and more of it, especially guys like, you know, Lindor and Altuve and these stars that we've seen now for a few years. In smaller markets comparatively to New York and Boston, I think, you know, you're looking at this wave that is just now starting. They're finally getting the stars in New York and Los Angeles and Boston, and as those teams kind of have gone through just a little bit of rebuild, and I think it's coming. I'm not too worried about it as worried as everybody else about having to face a baseball. I think there's just a weird lull between, you know, the Jeter Ortiz Chipper Jones era and the Trout Kershaw Judge whoever the next guy era. I think it's just a natural part of it, and I'm not too concerned.
Chris Cotillo from SB Nation and MLB Daily Dish. Outstanding analysis, Chris. We really appreciate it. We covered a lot of ground there in a lengthy period of time. So really, thank you so much for putting in the OT. Follow Chris on Twitter at Chris Cotillo, C-O-T-I-L-L-O, together. And make sure you check out the Daily Dish, MLBDailyDish.com as well. Chris, thank you so much, my man. We'll talk to you again, I hope.
Yep. Thank you, guys.
You got it. Good stuff from Chris Cotillo. Hey, you know what else is good stuff? Buffalo Wild Wings is good stuff. And my goodness gracious, do you know how big it is when you're having a party to order from the Buffalo Wild Wings takeout menu? You've got to get the app. The Buffalo Wild Wings app is outstanding, because then what you do is you kind of save your orders. You know, you can kind of save your favorites so you know what you want to order from the last time. You can schedule your pickup time. It is just such a great way to enjoy sports. So if you've got a party going on, you can certainly enjoy the party a lot more when you've got Buffalo Wild Wings in the house. Even if you're by yourself and you just want to watch the game from your couch and you're looking for great food, you call Buffalo Wild Wings, or you get on the app and you tap out your order, you schedule your pickup, and you go get it. They have some amazing specials, by the way, right now. Particular specific time-limited fan specials, like the barbecue pork grilled cheese that I cannot say enough about, and the buffalo loaded tots are well. By the way, the salads have even fresher ingredients now at B-Dubs, like the Santa Fe salad. So take a look for yourself. Watching games is better in groups, and it's best to do it with the B-Dubs party menu or from downloading the new app, Buffalo Wild Wings. Wings, beer, sports. Yes, indeed. Rolling onward, final segment of the broadcast. We got 10 more minutes of outstanding awesome for you. We're going to turn it over to Mike Miller for Drive Time coming up at the top of the hour at 5 o'clock. So I want to shift gears a little bit, because we did a little bit of comparison between the way sports are marketed the last segment when we talked to Chris Cotillo-Cush, talking about how the NBA has done a great job of putting faces in front of the fans,
right,
and marketing personalities, not just the sport itself, not just their athletic ability, but their personalities.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the beard, LeBron, Curry, Durant, you get to know these guys very personally because of, you know, the way they're marketed. And there are, of course, I think, you know, benefits to that. It's one of the reasons why they make so much more money than, for example, guys in the NFL do. And baseball is a different animal altogether, because they're the only sport that doesn't have a salary cap. So they're going to have a lot more money available for that reason. But I'm just kind of pointing out some of the differences between the different sports in the way they conduct their business and how money is distributed and divided among. And I'm not just talking about player salaries per se compared to one another, but player salaries compared to the money taken in, the revenue generated by the league, which seems to be kind of the new in vogue thing to do. If the boss makes more money, we get more money. Hey, you know, Laker bought the Warriors for $450 million, and now they're worth $2.6 billion. So therefore, how come the players aren't getting more of that? That seems to be the way things go. Well, that has got, and these contracts now with Curry signing a $200 million deal, James Harden signing a $228 million extension, you know that Russell Westbrook's is probably going to exceed that, And then LeBron's is probably going to exceed that. And we're getting into numbers that are just silly. It's like, you know, you're playing, you know, video games with money. Or you're playing Monopoly, I guess, like fake money. Well, that has led to, as you can imagine, some, let's just say, I guess we could just call it jealousy. I don't mean to make it sound as petty as all of that, but I guess that's the best way to call it. Jealousy on the part of some of the NFL players who are missing out on these numbers. Richard Sherman, among the most prominent players, speaking out saying, if we want to get the same kind of treatment that the NBA guys get, if we want to make the same kind of money that the Major League Baseball guys get, remember, we're probably just a year away from Bryce Harper getting the world's first $400 million contract.
Yeah.
Probably. Probably. And probably from New York. And we might see another one from the likes of, you know, Manny Machado. We might see another one from the likes of Mike Trout the next time he's up, although he's got a little bit of time. And we all know, of course, what I just said about the $200-plus million contracts by the NBA. So mm-hmm. Richard Sherman of the Seahawks, among those speaking yesterday at the ESPYs about why it is the NFL players have not gotten the same kind of financial rewards that players in the other top two sports in North America have gotten. And he says it's time for the NFL players to be willing to do something, whatever it takes, to get there. Oh, I'm sorry. Hold on one second. We've got a little bit of a tech problem here. Let me make sure I get that at its peak level. Here we go. One more time. And 3, 2, 1, go.
And as a union want to get anything done, then players got to be willing to strike. You know, I think that's the thing that guys need to 100% realize is you're going to have to miss games. You're going to have to lose some money if you're willing to make the point, because that's how MLB and NBA got it done. They missed games. They struck. They you know, flexed every bit of power they had, and it was awesome. It worked out for them. And also, our players just have to individually negotiate their own deals. You know, I think players get caught up and you know, oh, I want to be the biggest and baddest, and you got the biggest and baddest fake deal that anybody could have. You know, it's gonna pop like a balloon. But instead of taking the 3 years that you already have fully guaranteed and just ending the deal there, most of these guys are like, oh no, I want a 6-year deal, but only three is guaranteed. So why would I take a 6-year deal? I don't need a 6-year deal. Give me the 3, and then the salary cap's gonna bump again. And as the 3, I'm gonna re-up again. And then guys are like, you know, what if I get hurt? What if you get hurt at the end of the 3? Then they're probably gonna cut you anyway. You know, what's the real difference? So I think guys need to reevaluate how they look at contracts and how they look at longevity and things of that nature, because NBA players like, you know, KD and LeBron are sitting there taking 2-year deals like it's nothing. You know, mm-hmm. they're like, I'll take a 2-year deal because I'm going to wait for the salary cap to increase and get another bite at the apple. In our sport, they won't do it.
So there's a lot of stuff to unpack there, a lot of very interesting points that Richard Sherman makes. And so I'll start with the end and go back to the front. There's a reason why LeBron and Kevin Durant take those deals is because they have a very, very strong belief that they're not going to get hurt in their sports. Now, Durant has gotten hurt. Durant, if he takes a series of 1 or 2 year deals the way LeBron has done, he's in a little bit more jeopardy because he's proven to be injury prone more than LeBron. LeBron has never had a serious injury, knock on wood for him. He's never had a serious injury in his career. So he feels like I'm bulletproof. I can do this. I don't need a long-term guaranteed 5-year deal, and then if I get hurt in year 2, well, they still got to pay me the rest of the way. Kevin Durant apparently feels the same way, even though he's had some of those injuries. But that's the end part. Football can't do that because you are much more injury-prone in football just simply because of the nature of the contact sport, the nature of the beast.
So why, by the way, unlike baseball and basketball – or it is somewhat in basketball, but it's much more prevalent in football. That's why in football, the contracts aren't fully guaranteed the way they are in baseball and the majority of them in hoops.
And that's why players want guaranteed longer contracts. Richard Sherman is railing against here, saying, you know, you shouldn't do that because they're only going to cut you anyway. But the longer-term contract with the higher value is what gives you the higher signing bonus, which is the guaranteed money. And that's what guys want, that bigger piece of the pie up front. And that's very important, obviously. To a lot of guys. But then to what he started with, he said, you got to be willing to strike. We've got to be willing to lose money to make the larger point,
he said. If we want to, as a NFL and as a union, want to get anything done, then players got to be willing to strike.
And that's the problem. The biggest difference between those other sports and the NFL, the sheer number of guys. Major League Baseball rosters are 25. NFL or NBA rosters are 12. NFL rosters are 55. When we get into in season. And that's a hell of a lot more guys who don't make big bucks. The ones who are making, again, understand this is comparatively small numbers, you know, making just say $500,000 a year, they can't afford to miss 6 months of work and give all of that money away. Suddenly they can't make house payments. There are guys making league minimum all over the National Football League who, if the big money guys strike and are willing to lose money, are going to kill the lower guys. You know, the guys who aren't making the big dollars, and they're the ones more likely to cross the picket line to go play because they can't just not work. And that's one of the biggest problems. I think Richard Sherman and the rest of the NFL players are going to have to come to a realization. You will never, ever, because of the nature of your sport and the size of the rosters, ever be able to command the kinds of massive individual contracts that baseball and basketball players do. That's just reality. And that's a really good conversation that we'll have to spend more time on during tomorrow's Free For All Friday edition of the Extravaganza. All right, thanks to our guest, Chris Cotillo. And, hey, on the way out the door, let me do something nice for you. I've got a sweet deal of the week. Starts tomorrow morning at 9 o'clock online at 1065theticket.com. And it's a $50 gift certificate to Tecumseh Brewing Company in Tecumseh, Michigan. Just log on in the morning at 9 o'clock and get that $50 gift card for just $25. Or I'll give you one for nothing right now. Call at 5-866-240-1065. 866-240-1065. And you will win that bad boy for free. And that's all the time that we've got, but stay where you are because you know who's coming up next. Mike Miller in Drive Time right here on The Ticket. We'll see.